Broadcasting live from our Westlake studios, overlooking the great city of Austin, and helping you maneuver through this flowing dystopia, it's episode number 318 of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. Coming up this hour at 12:45, the Crap Bag talks about the latest 30 for 30 on those 86 Mets. At 12:30, our NFL news and notes includes the Bills Mafia now being required to vaccinate to attend games in Buffalo. And in mere minutes, we are talking about some Steve Sarkisian numbers that Chad researched last night. Does not provide optimism for this Longhorn fan. I'm Trey Elling, and sitting across from me is the Waxahachie native and level-headed Aggie who may speak your death into existence if he doesn't like you. It's Chad Hastings.
You damn right. Hope everybody's having a good Wednesday. Hump day, Rice week if you're a Texas fan, Florida week if you're a Bama fan. Let me turn that around. Bama week if you're a Florida fan. There are three ranked matchups this week. You've got the Bama-Florida game. You've got Auburn at Penn State, the battle of white helmets and probably fans wearing a lot of white at a 6:30 kick. That'll be a hell of a scene. And then late night, the Arizona State BYU game has now become a ranked battle on ESPN since BYU got itself ranked by winning the Holy War last week. So ready for the football. And Trey, we also have a unique idea coming this weekend. I love it when coaches and players will just fully commit to something that they deep down know it might be crazy, but they don't care. Dan Mullen has said both of his quarterbacks, Emory Jones and Anthony Richardson, quote, know the plan heading into this game. They do get it at home. It is Bama at the Swamp. But Florida is going to run two quarterbacks. The fans are a little concerned about Emory Jones because of his turnovers. He's already got four picks. The fans kind of dig Anthony Richardson because he's a little more of that, let's just say, Vince Young's kind of size, more of a 6'4", 240, you know, freak instead of a 6'2", whatever Emory Jones is. They're freakish in different ways. Richardson had a pretty good week last week against no one, but they're going to go with two quarterbacks against a Nick Saban Alabama team and a Nick Saban Alabama defense. Good luck, Gators. I hope you pull it off.
Yeah, hopefully deep down, those quarterbacks, the roster, and the Florida fan base know that the game plan is to try not to let yourselves get beat too bad by Alabama, because they're not winning that game this weekend.
I would not think so, but I would love to see it. I would love to see him put
up, I would too.
Love to see him put up a fight. I think everybody would. Everybody not wearing crimson and white would love to see that happen, but that's one of the big games of the week. We'll definitely be talking about that as the week goes on. We will get into some more college football stuff. Trey, how are you, sir? I know yesterday when we left, you and I were both in decent spirits, but we were both a little down after the Norm MacDonald news yesterday. I went home. My wife and I were talking about it. She was pulling up videos on her phone. I was pulling up videos last night. You said you might go Norm rabbit holing last night. Did you?
I did go deep down the Norm MacDonald rabbit hole and just watching clips and highlights from his career and stand up on the guest couch of talk shows and in other places as well. And it was weird for me yesterday because I haven't experienced this a whole lot in my broadcasting career where somebody that I'm really fond of dies during the show that I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it did derail my ability to continue talking on our program yesterday for the last hour and a half or whatever it was. So if that was a problem on your end, Chad, I apologize for that. And I'm not usually a guy that is RIP so-and-so on social media either. I just think that far too often that's more virtue signaling than anything else, the person trying to show everybody else that they care about death and not really caring that much about the individual. But Norm MacDonald is someone that, in really thinking about it last night as I was watching highlights and just considering the various points in my life where Norm has been important for me, has made a pretty profound impact on me as somebody who is trying to entertain people on these airwaves. So I'm going to get a little bit more into that at 1:45 during Where Are We At in Society, and also play a clip from an interview that BK and I did with Dennis Miller a few years ago when he had his comedy show coming through town, where I asked him specifically about Norm, and he tells a couple of great Norm McDonald stories.
Yes,
Chad, you had a chance to listen to those as I was editing
was
it
good.
In pre-show, and I look forward to bringing that to you people, as well as reflecting a little bit on what Norm McDonald means to me.
Yeah, it does get you, man. It's a weird thing, but yeah, when the famous folks, and whether it's famous in sports, it's famous in music, whatever. I've had a few of those over the years where it really does get you right in the, especially when you're right in the middle of the show, you got other things planned, or I mean, we just had the one. What was the one we just had? Literally going into the show one day.
Oh, Charlie Watts.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Right. I'm sitting here a Stones fan, and seconds into the intro, you and I both see that Charlie Watts died almost at the same time. And I'm like, oh my God, I got to do the show. And Charlie Watts, what are we doing?
Now, if that was Mick or Keith, how would that have affected you differently?
It would have been a little different, but okay. I mean, I'm a Stones guy. So anybody in that family goes, I'm pretty darn upset about it. And so it was rough. And I'm a drummer, you know, and I love Charlie. And that's but it's also, we talked about it that day, that's also the oldest member of the band who was over 80 years old.
Yeah.
And, you know, a certain group. But there was something about Norm McDonald, 61, when you didn't even know he was sick. That's a little extra punch yesterday.
So Norm, I think his most famous movie has to be Dirty Work, and it's a hilarious film. We should maybe consider reviewing that next offseason.
I've never seen it, and Jeff Howe sent me a text yesterday as we were talking and said, hey, man, if you haven't seen Dirty Work, check it out. I haven't seen it.
Dead on. Co-stars Artie Lang before Artie's life really fell off of a cliff. Chris Farley's in there.
Okay.
A couple of other notable people in that movie, too. But I saw a tweet yesterday, and I retweeted this, where somebody said, how in the world did Artie Lang just outlive Norm MacDonald? Nobody would have expected that 5 years ago, but here we are.
That is crazy. So we'll definitely still hit a little bit of that today. We hope you are having a good Wednesday. A lot of football to get into, and around these parts, it's Texas fans kind of trying to reset their brains on where this football team is, is where they're going, where they're headed, and maybe a lot of Longhorn fans, Trey, admitting that they probably overcooked game one, and they're trying to figure out how to process game two, because the Longhorns showed a lot of good stuff in that first game, and then it just felt like there was a lot of regression in game two. I'll start this way today. I'm driving in listening to Bucky and Aaron. Bucky was off today. Aaron was had different people coming in and out of the studio. Casey Studdard sat down in the studio. And for the first time ever on the radio, I heard him be honest. I'm just kidding. Casey's always ready to give you the honesty. And he said something. It was really short and sweet, but it spoke all of it if I was a Texas fan. He says, you know, the old thing is now back. The old thing was that the line of scrimmage, we don't have the line of scrimmage. We're not tough. We're soft. And now it's back. He said, I had guys texting me that were in the league with me. Guys texting me and calling me throughout the game saying your boys are soft. That's the thing that has to change. But when you have a game like that, I've heard every show say it differently, but it's not the loss. It's what it looked like. It's the optics of that loss. That a team that has been where it's been in the SEC did that to you in game two. So that tells me all I need to know. If Casey Studdard's got guys on him. And then I told you it was going to happen, Trey. I told Longhorn fans, you got to be ready to eat a joke or two this week.
Oh, yeah.
And that SEC video that's going around this week.
Who the heck is putting those two things together? That got turned around in a hurry.
And they've been real good at that, no matter what the story is in the conference. But this whole thing of, you know, Texas beat up, trying to paper shred the application to the SEC, it's all kind of part of that vibe of, do you belong? Are you going to be able to hold up? Are you going to be tough enough? All that stuff. Sark's got to get this thing turned fast. He's got two games. He's got two pretty good games to do it in here, but the real tests are coming. And the next time the bully walks up to Sark's team and asks for the money, they better have a plan other than, do you want 10s or 20s? Because that's kind of what they did in Fayetteville.
They need to be the aggressor at the point of attack. That was not happening often enough on offense, obviously, but that offensive line has such a low ceiling. It was most discouraging on defense, though, to watch the defensive line play at that high pad level and get pushed around. To watch the linebackers doing a little bit too much reacting versus attacking at the point of attack. And honestly, in going back and rewatching certain plays and talking to some people who have played this sport at the highest level, just watching them make the wrong decisions in the heat of the moment, even when it seems very obvious what they need to be doing in that moment. Safety play was trash. Inside Texas reported that Jaron Thompson has been receiving first-team reps at safety over Brennan Schooler this week in practice. I think that is a necessary move to be made. I would probably have Jett Bush on the field a little bit less going forward. And I think it's questionable as to whether who that second linebacker needs to be with DeMarvion Overshown on the inside right now.
By the way, I'm glad you just mentioned that. I'll admit that I missed it when the depth chart came out. But there is an or now. I'm not sure if it was there last week, but Brennan Schooler or Jaron Thompson is the listing at free safety this week. So if that was a slight change, we didn't mention that when the depth chart came out, but that might indicate what you're talking about.
Jaron's one of those guys who may not have the measurables necessarily, but he's just a football player, and he's got a nose for the ball, too. Those are the types of guys that you want at safety, especially when there seems like there is a lack of that type of player on defense, even with DeMarvion Overshown being out there. And look, he is far from flawless, too, playing the inside linebacker spot right now. I just don't know why this defense is playing so soft when the reputation of Kwiatkowski coming over from Washington and the staff that he accumulated on that side of the ball spoke to this notion that the physicality that we saw out of this defense with Chris Ash last year was going to continue. There shouldn't be this big of a drop-off, especially because your defensive line is filled with studs. Well, when your studs are playing like that, everybody else who's not quite as good is going to suffer as a result, too.
All right, we're getting rolling here on shirts and skins. You ready for these numbers, Trey? You ready?
Yeah.
You ready to hear some Sark numbers?
Is this going to be our specs set piece?
Let's do it. Let's get the specs set piece.
The specs set piece is brought to you by Specs Wine, Spirits, and Finer Foods. When it comes to savings, Specs leads the league with a larger selection at lower prices. Specs, official partner of Austin FC.
My apologies to Specs. I got so excited I forgot about Specs, which shouldn't be the case because I need a new bottle of Tito's vodka. So I'm probably headed to Specs in Elgin pretty soon for that. All right. So the last few days, week or so, but after the game, we had a fan shoot us a message yesterday, or I guess it was on Monday, talking about the road record of Steve Sarkisian, not something I'd looked up. So
it's a number that when we heard it for the first time, it honestly sounded made up to me.
Yeah, I was like, whoa, that can't be true, can it? So what I decided to do was look at Steve Sarkisian as a head coach. Let's strip the Saban away from this and really look at him as a head coach. You're basically talking about six full seasons and a little bit in 2015, and then obviously a little bit now. But basically six seasons, 09 through 13 in Washington, 14 and a little bit of 15 at USC, and then, of course, this year at Texas. Trey, the number that was sent to us was that his road record is 12 and 23. I can confirm that. My numbers say 12 and 23. Steve Sarkisian, as a head coach in a full season, has not had a winning road record at all.
That's not good.
He's had a 3-3. He's had a 1-4. He's had an 0-5 in his very first year. And obviously, he starts this year 0-1 on the road.
Well, it's troubling because he's losing two out of every three road games.
Right.
And the road games are only going to get more difficult as this team switches from the Big 12 to the Southeastern Conference.
Exactly. Yeah. And we'll get to the SEC thing, too. But so home games is 33-11. 33-11 at home. 12-23 on the road, all together, throw bowl games and everything in. 47-36 is the overall record as a coach. So a couple other things I looked at. Sark against ranked teams as a head coach is now 11-20. That's the overall.
All right, another one of those where you're losing two out of every three games in those circumstances.
Now, let's be fair. The Arkansas game wasn't one of those. So he got he was at 10-20 going into the year. He got the Louisiana game.
Yeah, that's true.
So he's 11-20 off that win. But here's the extra number I looked at, Trey, that I think might be a little disturbing to you and other Texas fans. A stat that I started looking at years ago for, first off, my Aggies and then the Longhorns was losing while giving up 40. It just feels punitive to me as a fan. I watched my Aggies lose a game, and it was a bowl game at the end of the 2010s. the 2000s. And I thought, how many times have I had to eat one of those? And I went and counted it. And I believe the number for A&M in the decade of the 2000s was 29 times. They lost and gave up 40. For Longhorn fans, same decade, 5 times in the 2000s. You could tell me 2 of them right now. There were only 3 more the whole decade eating a 40-point loss.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I've taken, for Sark, I took that stat and I cranked it up just a tad. I looked at a 40-point losing, giving up 40, but losing by 2 scores or more. So I'd give you credit for a close one, right? I'll give you credit for a shootout loss, maybe.
Oh, boy, I'm bracing myself here.
Steve Sarkisian, as a head coach, has now lost a game giving up 40 points or more and losing by 2 scores or more 18 times in a little over 6 seasons of football.
Wow.
By way of comparison, the Texas Longhorns in the entire decade of the 2010s, which, Trey, you know, wasn't exactly your best as a Longhorn fan, whole decade, Texas did that 11 times. He's done it 18 times in just over 6 years. He's eaten a 65. He's eaten 52, 52, 53, 45. He ate 250s back in 2010, and he obviously just ate a 40 and lost by 19. So if you're a Texas fan, maybe the number one thing is the guy you just mentioned a while ago. It's that Sark and Pete Kwiatkowski must come together and figure out a way to stop that. 18 times it gets away from him, and he has no way to stop it. And by the end of it, he's lost by multiple scores, and he's given up at least a 40 burger. That's a bad number.
I don't know who his defensive coordinators were previously, but I have more confidence in Kwiatkowski reversing that trend than just about anybody who could be on the job right now. But he has to come up with a better game plan versus what we saw on Saturday. They were going with too many even boxes and trying to stop that Arkansas rushing attack versus daring Arkansas to throw the football, because your secondary guys are probably a little bit better in coverage than they are stopping the run right now. And I realized DeSean Jameson gave up a big pass. That was in the third quarter, though. That was when things were starting to get out of hand and the offense wasn't doing their part. Defense was really beginning to break more than just bend. But he needed to realize that you had to put an extra guy or two into the box because Arkansas was gouging you even in the first half when things were a little bit closer. They never made that change, or if they did, they didn't make it soon enough. And it wasn't even a ball game by the end of the third quarter. That was unacceptable. But what you just read off, that is a really bad omen.
Yeah,
I hope that's just the result of him playing in the Pac-12 when the Pac-12 was a little bit advanced offensively and he just didn't have the right guy as his defensive coordinator. But considering what we just saw play out in Fayetteville just a handful of days ago, it's just a trend that has continued here at Texas at least through 2 games.
And we're already getting some good texts in that are perfectly fair. 337-3776. Somebody pointing out, hey, when he took over at Washington, the team was 0-12 the year before he took over. Yes, absolutely.
Great
there's,
point.
There's reasons. There's things you can look at and, you know, lies, damn lies and statistics and all of that. And stats are for losers.
Thank you, Mark Twain.
Yes, I get all of that. But I'm just giving you the numbers as they are. Also, if you need this number, as a head coach, Steve Sarkisian is now 0-3 against the SEC. That will become important later on. He's had 2 cracks at LSU, lost them both, one at home, one on the road, and now he just lost at Arkansas. And by the way, he ate a 40 burger at LSU 41-3 back in the day. Are there reasons for that and things that may not be his fault? Sure. I'm just telling you, it ultimately goes on his record. That's what the numbers would tell you right now. So, yes, 12-23. Is that road record? That's a little troubling if you're a Texas fan. And yes, he's got to work on 11-20 against ranked teams, but he does have a 1-0 mark so far at Texas because he's only played Louisiana in that ranked category. But a lot of things are going to need to change from what we saw over the weekend. If you still have somebody texted, shut up with your facts, Chad. I'm terribly sorry. I'm so sorry. Somebody said a lot different coaching staff around him than he had in the past. They will be fine. You would certainly hope hope so. Someone just texted, but he's an offensive genius. Fair. And then someone says, yeah, someone mentioned the Washington thing. Somebody says, what's his total record? Pretty terrible, too. I don't know about terrible, but 47 and 36 is that overall record.
You'd like it to be better.
If that's what you're looking for. So Steve Sarkisian trying to get things figured out as Texas gets ready for Rice. That will be, of course, a 7 o'clock kick on Saturday. More on that coming up. In fact, at 1 o'clock, we have our weekly conversation with Justin Wells of Inside Texas and On3.com. I know a lot of you look forward to that interview. At 2:05, we'll talk some Cowboys and a little Big 12 with Ari Temkin of the Cowboys Radio Network. What does he think that offensive line will look like when they face the Chargers on Sunday afternoon? Speaking of the NFL, coming up next, we'll dig into week 2 of the NFL a little bit. Plus, the Niners get some bad news, and the Bills have asked the Mafia to do something that feels maybe a little tougher than flying through a flaming table. We'll tell you what it is coming up on the Horn.
Shirts and skins.
Yo, VIP. Let's kick it. Collaborate and listen. Ice is back with a brand new invention. Something grabs a hold of me tightly. Flow like a harpoon daily and nightly. Will it ever stop? Yo, I don't know. Turn off the lights, huh? And I'll glow. To the extreme, I rock a mic like a vandal. Light up a stage and wax a chump like a candle. Dance, rush the speaker that booms. I'm killing your brain like a poisonous mushroom. Deadly, when I play a dope melody. Anything less than the best is a felony. Love it or leave it, you better gain weight.
All right, considering the last year or so of music, I might lean towards Weezer, but this actually sounds like Rob, so I'm going to say this is Vanilla Ice.
It is, Chad. It is a shameless podcast promotion Wednesday. New episode of Books on Pod out as of this morning. It is with Matt Siegel, who is the author of an excellent new book. I read a lot of books. Very few impact me as positively as this one. It's called The Secret History of Food, Strange but True Stories About the Origins of Everything We Eat. You can find out more about vanilla, ice cream, America, and its apple pie, cereal, dildo bread, corn, honey, rebranded seafood like Patagonian toothfish and whore's eggs, olive oil, and a whole lot more by reading this book or listening to my chat with Matt at booksonpod.com. Like any idea what Patagonian toothfish is called in 2021?
Patagonian toothfish?
Yep.
Tilapia? No, I don't know.
Close. Chilean sea bass.
Is that right?
Even though it's not usually from Chile. And whore's eggs, for those wondering, well, you'll just have to listen to the conversation. It is something that you can get at most sushi restaurants, though.
If I'm not mistaken, Chilean sea bass is what they served at Jurassic Park as they were doing the tour.
Is it?
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, Patagonian toothfish.
There you go.
Much more befitting of a place that has dinosaurs, I guess.
The old Chilean sea bass. Exactly. A lot of stuff going on here at the Horn. Your Wednesday night lineup includes Under the Lights with Rick Epstein and Jeff Power. They'll talk a lot of high school football tonight, 7 to 8. 8 to 9 is Fight Night with Eddie Cross and Jordan Wahlberger. 9 to 10, Sports Guys Talking Wrestling with Stu Myrick and Justin Simmons. You can go to hornfm.com for the full lineup of everything. Also, we've got your chance to win Longhorn tickets, all kinds of different ways to do that. Stay tuned. I'll tell you about that Randall's virtual ticket window that comes up tomorrow during RBKD. A lot of good texts rolling in, too, on the Specs text line, 337-3776. And look, I definitely do not mean to throw out numbers as some kind of be-all, end-all. I'm just telling you what the numbers are. People have been texting in during the break about all these different things. Well, wait a second, but it's this and it's that. And some people have also brought up, you know, the personal stuff that Sarkisian had going on. And he's fought through that. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And someone also texted Trey, well, why in the world would Texas hire him if all these numbers are so bad and awful? It's like, well, they're assuming that he, not only did he clean up some things, but that Nick Saban cleaned up some things over I guess he was technically 3 years there maybe, where it was a year, and then two is coaching, or maybe it was just two. But then he had some time in the pros and all that.
He was with the Falcons.
When he was with the Falcons. I mean, that's the general idea. All I'm telling you is a game like that made me look up numbers I hadn't looked up before. And his head coaching, you know, road and record does have a lot of those type of games. You just don't want it to become a pattern. I heard Rod talking about it yesterday at RBKD. Hey, one time is one time.
Yeah.
You know, but you're gonna get your ass kicked every once in a while. Things are going to happen. But around here, if that thing continues to happen, Longhorn fans are just going to think they are officially cursed, maybe forever.
We get to find out pretty quickly what Steve Sarkisian is going to do on the road this year, because the next road game is at TCU, an opponent that has been near impossible for Texas to beat over the last decade. So I think that's a great next road test for this football team to see if these coaches can get their heads out of their asses, they can put their players in position to succeed, and if the players can actually execute. Because every single one of those things failed on Saturday.
Yeah.
It was an abomination, but it is just one game. Steve Sarkisian is a guy who is all about looking forward versus dwelling on the past while understanding the importance of learning whatever necessary lessons need to be extracted from failure. So now we get to see that in action. This weekend, maybe to a small degree, but it's just Rice. Even the next week, Texas Tech, yeah, conference foe. Texas Tech is not very good this year, and that game is in Austin. That next real test, after you don't look ahead, take care of Rice, take care of Texas Tech, it's at TCU. We're going to get to find out literally 2.5 weeks from now whether all of this chatter is just that or if it's legit. And then we get to find out pretty quickly after TCU about how Steve Sarkisian fares against his rivals. That may be something else worth looking up before it's all said and done. How does he do against his rivals? Because I'm a little bit worried right now after hearing the versus ranked opponents and road stats.
Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah, we'll definitely be getting into that. Because, right, 1 week after TCU is OU?
I believe so, yeah.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
So we'll be getting to that, obviously, pretty quickly. Texas and Rice this week. And obviously, we'll be digging into that as the week goes on. Still trying to process a lot of what happened over the weekend with Texas and Arkansas. That's one of those things about the losses that the coaches and players have to move on, and they have to get ready for the next game. The fans wallow in it for a while, and we kind of hopefully we're helping you do that to process all the info, and you listen to all the shows, listen to our guys breaking it down, and hopefully that can kind of help you get through it. A lot of stuff going on here today. Shirts and Skins fired up on a Wednesday. Justin Wells of Inside Texas coming up at 1. Ari Timken to talk Cowboys with us at 2. And Trey, we got NFL Week 2 about to get underway, and it starts with bad news for the 49ers. The Niners are going to be playing in one of the 1-0 matchups this week. They're at Philadelphia. I'm a Cowboys fan, so I don't know what to do other than root for power outages or whatever. But San Francisco at Philly will be without Raheem Mostert. As we kind of right around the time we were going off the air yesterday, it was announced that he will have season-ending knee surgery. We knew he was hurt. We knew it didn't look good, but it became season-ending yesterday afternoon. That sucks for that great running attack.
That's a bummer for that rushing attack. They have other guys who are capable of getting the job done. Elijah Mitchell looks like he has a chance to be special given the opportunity. Jamichael Hasty, the Baylor alum, looked really good on Saturday, and expect to see more of Trey Sermon going forward as well, former Oklahoma Sooner and Ohio State Buckeye. I hate this for Mostert because he is a guy that, when he's been healthy enough, has shown to be one of the most explosive running backs in all of the NFL. I think he has maybe the top-end speed for a guy who gets going as fast as he possibly can. That's why we've seen him break a number of big plays over the last couple of years. But his problem, going several years back now, because he's been in the league for a while, is staying healthy. And unfortunately, 2021 is another season where the injury gods have come out victorious over Raheem Mostert.
Yeah, and what we'll have to watch with that team is exactly what you watch with the Ravens. Slightly different because the quarterback isn't quite as impactful in the running game. Being nice to Garoppolo on that one. even when you put Trey Lance in, you're not putting him in to do Lamar Jackson type things. But, Trey, those offenses are what those offenses are. And the Ravens are still going to run the ball. And if you know anything about San Francisco's head coach and his last name and what that last name means, the Shanahan mantra is, our system is our system. We will create running backs where you didn't even know there were running backs.
Yeah.
Like, that's just what they've done. That's what his dad did, and that's what he's going to do.
Including guys, because Kyle has further evolved what his dad did so many years ago. I mean, they'll use guys like Deebo Samuel in running back situations. Now, maybe more jet sweeps type stuff, but Deebo Samuel, after 1 week, looks like he has returned to that rookie season form where he was one of the most explosive guys in the league. That is great news for the 49ers if they can get him back to 100% after the various ailments that really sidelined and derailed him throughout 2020.
Yeah, and if you don't know names like Elijah Mitchell, everybody around here knows Trey Sermon, who I don't think played in week one, but he'll play now.
No, he was a late scratch. Elijah Mitchell actually got the nod over him, and that worked out really well for San Francisco because he was their best running back.
They also signed, I missed this, they signed Kerryon Johnson.
Oh, I hadn't seen that.
The former Auburn player.
I really dug Kerryon at Auburn. He did some decent things at Detroit, but ultimately when they drafted DeAndre Swift, you knew his time was probably short with the Lions.
Elijah Mitchell, rookie. Trey Sermon, rookie. Jamichael Hasty, second-year guy. They are all on the active roster, and they're going to get carries. Mm-hmm. It'll be a wild team to watch. Definitely hated to see that for Raheem Mostert. He is fun to watch. Purdue, I think, is where he went to school back in the day.
I don't know, so I'll take your word on that.
I think that is right on Mostert. But, yeah, San Francisco at Philly. Cowboys fans, the hell do you do there? Root for the Niners because the Eagles are in your division, I guess?
Yes.
That's what you do?
Yes.
Okay.
It's an easy decision.
All right. I won't say the words out loud, but deep down I'll do that.
Well, especially because Philly, look, I understand it was a listless Atlanta Falcons team that way too many people were overrating heading into the season, but they just beat the hell out of the Falcons. So I think that they are your chief rival now in terms of winning the division now that Ryan Fitzpatrick has gone down in Washington.
Yeah, that's true. You might be right there. Yeah, that's right. Tomorrow night with Washington and the Giants, you got Mr. Heinicke getting his second start, I think, ever in the NFL.
Yes, because he started a game ahead of Dwayne Haskins last year.
There you go.
Because that train was coming off the rails.
I like how you couldn't even say that without smiling. Like, it was just, yeah, there was a little bit of an NFL joke to that one. Yeah,
I will always remember Dwayne Haskins. One, as a guy that I thought would be better in the NFL than he is, but as the dude who brought Washington back from whatever the deficit was to give them the lead late in the game. I think it was his rookie season, maybe. And with time remaining on the clock, he was taking selfies with fans in the stands as Washington was blowing the game.
Yeah.
That was such a terrible look, but also foretelling what to expect with Dwayne Haskins.
It definitely was. Before we hit this break, let's also tell you that we have a fourth NFL team that has decided that their fans need to be vaccinated to come to games. We already had the Saints, we already had the Seahawks, and we already had the Raiders. And now the Bills have informed the mafia that before you go, well, you can go flying through tables all you want in the parking lot, okay? If you want to show up and go through tables and pay our parking, that's fine. But if you're going to come to the games, you need to be vaccinated. They're giving them a deadline of the 26th of this month to have one shot and then a deadline of Halloween to be fully vaccinated. Those fans 12 and over will not be required to wear masks once this goes into effect. So, Trey, team number four, the Bills, saying you got to be vaccinated to come to the game.
Although people mistake what I say on the airwaves about vaccines, the unvaccinated, natural immunity, as me being anti-vax. I've never been anti-vax. I've understood the value of the vaccines, and more than anything else, the vaccines have done a great job of keeping a lot of people out of the hospital and from dying. Those numbers shifting a little bit. There were some Rhode Island statistics that just came out that I tweeted about. You can go check that out at Courtesy Wave if you'd like. But I've always maintained that the most at-risk amongst us, the fattest, the oldest, and those with comorbidities benefit the most from taking the COVID-19 vaccine, Chad.
Yes.
Considering how many fat asses exist in the Bills Mafia, they should already be vaccinated. It shouldn't require this step for them to take that step.
Okay, so A, how dare you, but B, I like where you end up. You're saying you endorse Bills Mafia getting vaccinated.
Yes, it is. Obesity is the number one driver in dealing with hospitalization and death for those who catch COVID. The lard asses in the Bills Mafia.
How dare you.
Of which that populace has got to be like 90 to 95%.
I've never seen one.
Benefit the most from the vaccine because they are already in that most at-risk group.
How many times have I told you? It's not that the Bills fans are big. It's that those tables are too small.
It can be a combination of the two.
Your eyes are playing tricks on you. That's what's going on.
I am glad to see Buffalo draw a line with the vaccines versus the unvaccinated while still allowing flaming tables to have bodies thrown through them in the parking lot.
I just love that the four teams that have gotten on the list so far have a legendary maniac group of fans.
Yeah.
The Seahawks, the Saints, the Raiders, and the Bills.
Yep.
What's next? The Niner fans? Like, what's the next group that we're going to say have to be vaccinated and then stand back and see what they'll do?
I'm gonna get in some trouble with this one, but
Eagles, Giants?
People who wear jerseys into the stadiums.
Oh, well, that's everybody. Yeah, that's it. That they should have put the vaccine in the inside of those jerseys and it just seep into your skin. Then everybody'd be vaccinated in an NFL game.
Like the stitching
yes.
or the patch on the outside is subtly poking you in the chest.
Exactly.
Giving you immunity.
Yes, they'll call that the Tyrod Taylor vaccination.
Don't put it past the NFL.
Yeah, it's true. All right, there's some NFL notes for you. Keep an eye on that story. Four teams now saying you got to be vaccinated to come to the games. Up next, it is the Crap Bag, and we'll talk about the latest 30 for 30. It's about time. We got a two-parter on this crew. This is The Horn.
Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey.
Nice and gritty. What do you got, Trey?
I don't know if I'd refer to this as gritty or not, but this is Mariah Carey. The song is called Honey, and it plays into the current Shameless podcast promotion. New episode of Books on Pod out as of this morning with Matt Siegel, the author of The Secret History of Food. Strange but true stories about the origins of everything we eat, and that does include the backstory on honey, which is something that has been used not only for nutritional but also medicinal purposes going back tens of thousands of years. We dive into that at booksonpod.com.
You're not going to make people hate honey, are you? Are you going to go breaking down honey to where I don't like it anymore?
No.
Honey's a positive.
The opposite.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Thank God.
I dig honey.
I love honey.
Especially local honey, even though the evidence is perhaps anecdotal that local honey can help with local allergies.
Ah, okay. All right. Check out booksonpod.com for that discussion. Yeah, the groove there to me was a little grimy.
Okay.
Whereas Mariah's voice is not. I think it's a good combo. It's like a sweet and salty for you as a food guy.
All right.
Kind of like that.
Okay.
Kind of like that combo. I thought that groove was kind of cool, though. More of that discussion coming up. Trey's got more music. He'll connect back to Books on Pod coming up. Also at 1:45, where are we at in society? Trey's got more thoughts on Norm MacDonald's death and some sound about Norm MacDonald. Trey did an interview back in the day with Dennis Miller, and he asked about Norm MacDonald. Trey played it back today, and we realized, oh, that's perfect. We need to have people hear those stories. It was really good.
I've tried to go back in and find my interview with Norm MacDonald from my time at WGN Radio. It's not on my current computer. Mm. I'm really hoping that it's on my external hard drive, because otherwise that thing is lost forever, and that would be a bummer.
Hopefully you can dig that one up. Coming up at 1, Justin Wells of Inside Texas. But right now, let's get into Crap Bag and talk about the latest 30 for 30. It's about time.
Chad's Crap Bag.
Crap Bag. If you need an easy way to remember it, just think of a bag of crap.
Brought to you by AV Consultations, 255-8678, or go to avconsultations.com. Sometimes I tell you in the Crap Bag about documentaries that I've seen, and I'll break it down for you and tell you why it's so great. Sometimes I'm just telling you because I'm also reminding myself, because I haven't seen it yet. This would be the latter. I'm just glad it exists. It's on my DVR. I have not sat down to consume yet because we're talking two full parts of this thing. I'm guessing it's like an hour each. God, I'm hoping it's 2 hours each. But Trey, they finally gave us a 30 for 30 on the 86 Mets. I'm so excited.
I mean, this is one of like the top 5 or 10 teams in the history of sports.
Yes.
Deserving of this treatment. How has this not happened until now?
I don't know. They did have a documentary a few years ago just on, wasn't it just like Strawberry and Doc Gooden? Do you remember that one? Where they focused in on just those two guys?
Yeah.
But we've never had the full treatment of, and we've even had like, you know, little documentaries that'll hit, well, that'll hit the Buckner play. And that game and deal with a little bit of it. We've never had one just focused on the 86 Mets. So you're going to get, as far as I can tell, Keith Hernandez is in it. He's Keith Hernandez.
Yeah.
You're going to get all those stories, Doc Gooden and Strawberry and the run in 86. And wasn't Dykstra on that team?
Yep.
Mookie and all those guys. That is, it's out there for you. If you have ESPN Plus, you can access it that way. I've got it on the DVR ready to roll. I think they debuted last night, but they will do reruns. So do a search on your DVR or however you find stuff. 30 for 30. I think they're calling it like One Night in Queens or 1 Year in Queens or something about Queens. So double check that. But the latest 30 for 30 is 86 Mets. I know we all get lost in football once it gets started. And we miss these things. But we'll try to keep you up to date on some of these documentaries. Trey told you about the post-9/11 comedy documentary yesterday. And definitely check that one out. I just finished that. My man Rick Sacamano just told me he watched like a 6-part 9/11 documentary on Hulu that was done by National Geographic that he says is just incredible and that I need to check it out. And I know I'm going to be checking out this 30 for 30 on the 86 Mets, so I cannot wait.
I talked to both Davey Johnson and Keith Hernandez in the past about their respective books, and, of course, they cover that team as a part of the process. And those guys are – they obviously still hold that team in very high regard because they both won a World Series with that team, but just because the cast of characters was so unique.
My God, Hojo and Ray Knight and just all those dudes.
Kevin freaking Mitchell.
They had – oh, I forgot about him. You're right. Yes.
He was a young guy on that team.
And that's the other thing. Since I'm not a New York guy, and I didn't, you know, it's not like that was my childhood team or anything, I'm going to learn something. I was 12 when that was going on. So I'm going to learn something about that team that I didn't know. I'm going to learn a lot of stuff probably that I didn't know. Cannot wait for that. I love that they're doing these documentaries and, you know, going back to these famous teams, because there's a certain lore, Trey, about a team that's known for being really good and a party machine all at the same time. The, like that, you know, the Raiders team that won the Super Bowl that apparently tore New Orleans apart before they tore the Eagles apart. That's legendary stuff. The Cowboys era when all that partying was going on in the early 90s. Now, some of those stories aren't necessarily good, but you know what I mean. When you can absolutely party, the guy on LSD throwing a no-hitter, like that stuff, to me, adds another legendary layer to it.
Doc Ellis.
And the Met, right, and the Mets were that kind of team, where we're going to hear some story about Howard Johnson and Keith Hernandez and Lenny Dykstra and Daryl Strawberry, all four, like, made a pact not to sleep for 3 weeks straight. And they did it, and they won 10 games or something.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be wild. We're going to hear some good stories.
That is crazy. What are some of the other teams that fall into that category of just filled with wild characters and they understood how to win games, too? I mean, I think at least one or two of those Cowboys teams
definitely
in the early to mid-90s belongs on that list.
Definitely those. Yeah, that's why I mentioned them. And then, like, I'd go Michael Irvin era of the U.
Maybe so.
There's got to be at least one of those teams that you'd talk about.
Any of those Bulls teams belong there? Maybe that 98 team, that 97-98 team.
Maybe. They didn't strike me as a party team, though.
They weren't, but they did have Dennis Rodman, who took care of the partying for everybody.
Yeah, that's true. They did have Rodman. Yeah, there are a few of those out there, but that's just for somebody says 84 New York Giants. That may be one to bring up. Yeah, that mid-era, the mid-80s Giants team. And, so that is out there right now on ESPN. Definitely check those out. We started the show today by looking at a little closer at Steve Sarkisian. Some of those numbers of his, we'll be talking about that at 1:30. Some of the numbers that maybe don't look so good. Obviously, there's reasons for all of this and things that you hope have changed. But to lose like that in Fayetteville, did get some people thinking about, wait a minute, now what's his number? What is he again in road games? And what is he against SEC? And what is he here? We'll give you those numbers again at 1:30 and dig back into that. Up next, though, let's talk about the game itself and what it said to Justin Wells of Inside Texas and On3.com. We'll get his thoughts on the Longhorns as they are 1-1 getting ready for Rice. Don't move. It's the Horn.